Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the Tailgate Podcast. I am Terry Foy. He is Nick Acello. And Nick, Duke has lost in February. Have you ever heard that before?
This is how stupid everything is. Is Duke loses to Jacksonville. I'm going to take about the next 2 hours to enjoy my Coors Lights and before I have to go to the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport to get on a flight. But that's the scariest thing that could happen. I didn't think Duke was going to for sure win the national championship until they just lost this past game. And now they're going to steamroll everybody in their way. Tale as old as time. If it was any other team, I'd be like, oh, perfect. Love to see some vulnerabilities. All this is going to do is strengthen them. And it's the classic story of the Phoenix in February. And I'm sick of it. What are your thoughts?
First of all, congratulations to John Galloway, Chris Przinski, who put in a defense that held the Blue Devils to 12 goals over the course of a game. Max Wahlbaum, a Tufts transfer, who did a really nice job scoring four goals and two assists. And a faceoff guy in Nathan Kapp, who went 15-30 against Jordan Ginder. Probably notably no Jake Naso in this game. I think that it goes both directions. I can't help but think about this in the context of the performance that Hawkins put in against the Jacksonville Dolphins last week in both teams' opening games. Obviously, Duke, you know, they had played on Friday. They're 3-1 now. They're not a juggernaut, I guess, is what I come back to. Brennan O'Neill, two goals, two assists, 22% shooting. So clearly I'm all over the place. I think where I come down on is Jacksonville has to be good enough in order to take advantage of the fact that Duke is okay with losing these games and they schedule accordingly. I don't think it is a foregone conclusion that they benefit from them to the degree that we decided retroactively that it was between 2010 and 2014 when they won three national championships in 4 years and had one of these types of games every single year. So I guess my point is that, like, you know, between High Point, who we're recording this as Virginia High Point is in the first quarter, High Point needing overtime to beat Colgate and not looking particularly impressive against Maryland in their opener, and then Richmond losing to North Carolina on Friday night. My point is, you know, that conference has been basically a race between these three teams the last couple of years, and it seems like Jacksonville probably has taken a little bit of a step forward. Meanwhile, Duke needs to continue to improve. They go about their business kind of the same way they always do, from the standpoint of, like, again, we need to learn about ourselves. We need to know that we're not invincible. All the other things that you need to convince a person who goes to Duke needs. And yeah, so that's how I feel about it.
I like that things are clearing up, and it's the classic. My least favorite thing about college football is how the SEC, whenever they lose to an SEC program, it's a quality loss, and whenever they beat an SEC program, it's this is the best team. And it's interesting because Duke is really the only team that I don't apply that to. And so, like, I look at Jacksonville, and, you know, Jacksonville has that loss to Hopkins, which was kind of close, and Hopkins just kind of got smoked by Georgetown today, but they kept it close for a little bit. So as I'm trying to figure out who's in the God tier and who's in the great tier. Like, Syracuse winning 28-5 was, I thought, like, one of the clearest, okay, this is going to be a real deal team. And in the same way that that was the thing, like, Duke losing, I'm like, okay, so they're probably going to be the real deal team. And outside of that, like, Jacksonville, are they good? I want to believe. I love Galloway. I think he's a great guy. And I think this is going to be like one of those program defining, like, gives them the swagger that they can go and step into any single game with confidence. And this might be a good question for you. How have the teams that have beaten Duke in February generally fared versus, like, their average
the year before or after when they didn't beat Duke in February? Pretty much the same. I don't think it's a solid indicator of what's to come. I mean, you know, I believe that there was a Dartmouth game 1 year. I think there was a Harvard game 1 year. I think Colgate might have beaten them at one point. So it's kind of all over the place. Obviously, you know, High Point has beaten them, and then in some years they win in the conference championship, and in other years they don't. So I think it's a little bit all over the place. But yeah, I don't think that this is like a bellwether that suggests that Jacksonville is going to be a top 15 team. I would caution people to look at them considerably differently than they otherwise would have.
I would encourage them to get on the train or get off the tracks. So that's, again, that's the difference. That's the difference between you and I. I'm a believer and you're a hater. Before we go into the games, just like, can you speak briefly on how in the early stages of a season you decide who's good and bad? And I think like a barometer right now is a team like Hopkins, you know, went over Jacksonville, went over Towson, big loss to Georgetown. How do you distinguish between who you think is going to be in the Final Four versus the top 10 versus the top 15 versus, you know, not good?
Yeah, well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to plug my poll, which is going to be up on InsideLacrosse.com on Monday morning. I mean, answer to the question is that you have to start from last year, and then you do your little, you know, it's not math, right? You do your fake math around like, oh, they had this freshman, they had this transfer, they lose this senior, and then you just kind of create like a little bit of a formula, I suppose, and then you try to get your eyes on them, whether it's practice or a scrimmage. And that can either like confirm or I guess reject or can contradict your expectations. And then from there, it's like every game has increasingly significant influence. So I guess I would say that like the first game, now I'm going to judge my opinion, or I'm going to base my opinion like 50% on the one game and 50% on my preseason expectations. And then the second game, it's going to be like thirds. And then by the third game, like the preseason expectations are almost completely gone. And, you know, you just kind of have enough of a, like, data set. But the problem is, because the sport is so messed up and it doesn't – not everybody starts playing at the same time. I mean, we made idiots of ourselves last week thinking that Notre Dame was going to play this weekend, and they didn't, which is a great indicator of the fact that, like – why will it be that Duke will have played four games before Notre Dame has played any? That doesn't make any sense. But the point that I'm making is – we don't know how good their opponents are either, right? So you look at it in the context of Villanova has a win over Penn State. Penn State struggled against Lafayette. Lafayette just won their first game in like 1,000 days. And that's not an exaggeration. They literally won their first game in like 1,000 days on Saturday. So
good job, Lafayette.
How good is Penn State? How good is Villanova by virtue of the outcome of that game? I mean, I think we're still in a position where like there isn't enough information in order to come to that conclusion. So ultimately, to answer your question, it's a guess. Secondly, it's based on some measure of, I don't know, what you would hope these things would be based on, evidence, I guess. But yeah, no, I don't have a better answer for you than that.
Mine is vibes. Like, I'm just literally picking up big vibes. It's like that meme going around where everyone's an empath. It's like, as an empath, I'm sensing that Duke is still going to be nasty, even though they lost to Jacksonville, and that Hopkins is going to blow it. And are you ready for my first hot take to talk about games, by the way?
No, because I want to talk about vibes. But yes, I think that this is going to segue naturally into what you want to talk about, because you rolled out
about me.
Syracuse's 28-5 shellacking of Holy Cross as being a vibe in the sense that now Syracuse is going to be good. I am already on the island as a Syracuse hater. And all I'll say about this is listen to what Gary Gates said after the game. So this was a team, Holy Cross was 3-5 last year, 3-7, something like that. They ended their season early due to disciplinary issues from the standpoint of COVID protocol. They had a first-year head coach who had taken over in January. I'm not trying to go to town on Holy Cross. All I'm saying is that, you know, they won. Jacob Fopp was incredible. He won, like, I think 22 of 25 faceoffs. They had the ball the whole time. Their defense never had to play. They scored on 54% of their possessions. It all adds up to I'm still taking Maryland on Sunday.
I'm taking Cuse over Maryland, and here's why. Because as an empath and as someone who is strictly off of vibes, I would love to be playing for the Syracuse team for two reasons. One, like, you were coming off of some very public and really bad incidents that I won't even, you know, go into detail about, but everybody that's been a lacrosse fan has kind of seen Syracuse not be an ideal program in the last couple of years. And you have the chance under the new GOAT coach to redefine the entire program moving forward. And I wouldn't be surprised if Coach Gate, everybody's very casually calling him Gary. I'm like, that's Coach Gate to you, sir or ma'am. I think they're looking for an entire reset on the program. And I think that when you get kids to buy into that, it literally just makes a difference. And as someone who picks up on vibes, I pick up on a 28-5 shellacking of who you were just taking a dump on. Holy cross. Anytime you're winning 28-5, you're trying to prove a point and you're trying to say, okay, here's the deal. Watching guys take advantage of defensemen anyways, their vision, their speed, their separation against an inferior opponent, the way that they were doing it is going to be translatable to a better opponent from the highlights that I did see. So I'm taking Syracuse, and I think that they're going to be a Final Four team, put in the books.
Well, let's talk about the other game that influences that point of view, which is the Maryland Terrapins putting it on the Loyola Greyhounds 20-8. And I struggle with this one because on the one hand, I think Maryland is awesome. And on the other hand, it doesn't make sense that Loyola is struggling to the extent that they are. It's not just about this performance against the Terps. It's also about their scrimmage against Syracuse, in which they got rolled, and their scrimmage against Richmond, in which they struggled as well. And again, not to put too much stock into scrimmages, but Michigan was up like 17-3 on Syracuse. So point being that like in 1 week's time, either Syracuse got that much better or Loyola is struggling and has continued to struggle. So, you know, the part that doesn't make sense is that this is basically the same Loyola team that was a goal away from the Final Four last year. And they didn't look athletic enough to stay in front of Maryland's shooters, and they didn't look athletic enough to get a step at the under end of the field on Maryland defenders. So I'm just kind of at a loss, and I don't even know what a better Loyola team is going to look like, except for a group that moves the ball more quickly and efficiently consistently.
I hate to agree with you, but I think you hit the nail on the head. Is watching the highlights from that game, like every single time, it just came down to this is a clear difference in athleticism. It's like if they put together the perfect game plan and rolled it out against Maryland, Maryland was just like going to tap dance their way, lock down their offensive players and toast their defensive players and do it in a way that Maryland didn't even need a game plan. Like that game made me sell all of my stock in Loyola. It solidified a lot of, you know, preconceived notions I had about Maryland and the fact that they're going to be a wagon. Thank God they don't have Jared Bernhardt, but now instead of Jared Bernhardt, they have like, you know, six very good threats at all times on the field. But how negative can we be on this podcast? Like, we're not in the business of being mean to college kids. And I actually kind of hate when people are like overly analytical of college kids, but I just think Loyola athletically, from what I've seen and from what I've heard about the scrimmages, is not going to be a team that makes any noise whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that you said exactly what I said. So I think we're pretty much on the same page as it comes to negativity. Now, that being said, like, I think that there's a path where they can overcome this issue or overcome this deficit or this deficiency, because I think that they did it last year. And, you know, did they get maybe a break by not having to play an ACC team until the quarterfinals? I suppose, but they played them to overtime. So, you know, is that an indication of the fact that, whatever, they can do that against Carolina or Syracuse or Notre Dame if they run into them? I don't know. But, yeah, no, it's interesting that, you know, we're talking about these one-sided games when this was a Saturday that featured 7 one-goal games. The one that I was paying the closest attention to was UMass versus Army, because I'm of the opinion that UMass is the type of program that when you think they're going to stink, they end up being awesome. And when you put any expectations on them, they end up coming up short. And I felt like this was a year in which nobody thought UMass was going to be any good. Army was favored by 4.5 goals in this game. And it was just such a typical, like, dirty guerrilla team performance out of UMass. Now, they ended up losing by a goal, and that was largely because of Stevie Graber's very clutch face-off win with about 30 seconds left. But in between, fallen behind 2-0 and then 6-2 at the start of the game. And then I believe they were trailing 14-11 inside of a minute to go. They scored with 48 seconds left and 36 seconds left. Just an incredible performance. Shane O'Leary scored with 1 second left on the clock in the third quarter, going coast to coast in a goal that you would have been incredibly proud to have ever scored in your entire career. UMass is going to be an interesting team to watch. Army is going to be just fine, but that was a good one. And then, you know, we got to get into the game that includes our guest, Patrick Daly, number 66 from Villanova. He scored 6 goals, including the game winner, as the Wildcats topped Penn State in State College, a game that was played outside, so you don't get to blame Haluba Hall for any type of goalie woes. Ultimately, Alaric Fayak, I believe, made 15 saves and let in 13, so a nice rebound performance from him. Let's go ahead and hear from Patrick Daly on the Villanova side of things.
And the Tailgate podcast continues with Patrick Daly, Villanova attackman, whose Wildcats dramatically defeated the Penn State Nittany Lions on Saturday. Patrick, you put in 6 goals, including the game winner. For our listeners who didn't see the sequence, can you describe the way that that last goal unfolded?
Yeah, I mean, it was just kind of we were man up. It was just a bit of a scrum kind of in front of the net. It was just kind of a lucky thing, kind of just popped right there. Just the way, like, there's no one really on my hands, and kind of just right in front of the crease, just picked it up and put it in. It was nothing special, but, I mean, garbage goals are garbage goals and mattered when it mattered. So was happy to, you know, get that going and obviously get that last goal.
Okay, first off, good to talk to you. Good to meet you. Pleasure. That is a disgusting display of humility. No such thing as garbage goals. Would love to see you hype yourself up a little bit more. You're a king. Talk about yourself as such. So that's my first comment. My question is, I've become relatively good friends with Mac O'Keefe. You might know him as a Penn State grad who played lacrosse there. I'm looking for dirt on Penn State's program. Is there someone that maybe we can chirp? Is there something about Penn State that you want me to relay to Mac? Because Terry asks the formal questions and I ask the hard-hitting questions.
Oh, I don't know about that. I got really nothing on him. Honestly, I didn't really have any like big encounters or chirps yesterday. It was pretty – Peck, who was covering me, was a good kid. There wasn't much talking from the sideline from years past. There usually was. So there wasn't much. It was a pretty clean game. I think everyone was pretty locked in. You know, obviously it was pretty tight going into the fourth quarter and stuff. So I think it was more people just focusing on doing their jobs and stuff. And there wasn't really any chirping. So I got really nothing for you on that one.
I'm told that that's a rarity though, because when I was doing my background intel on you over the course of the last 6 hours, all I was told is that there is no official in the Mid-Atlantic region who hasn't asked either Coach Corrado or Coach Connor to tell number 66 to stop talking.
Yeah, I would say I like to talk a little, but I think it's all just in the, you know, heat of the moment. I don't try and do anything. I don't know. I think I just do it to kind of just see where I can get my defenders off their game and stuff like that and see if they're more worried about talking to me than actually playing. So that's kind of where I kind of, you know, talk my game, but it's nothing too crazy.
Okay, so I want to – this one's going to be a two-parter. The first is that SpongeBob meme, you know, the old reliable, and then they open it up. Do you have an old reliable chirp? And the second part is going to be, I'm going to tell you mine, and then I would like for you to critique it. So do you have the trustworthy chirp in the back pocket ready to go at all times, or is it more just whatever comes to your mind in the moment?
I mean, I think it's usually kind of just heat of the moment, what's kind of going on. I mean, I feel like it's always tougher, you know, I feel like, in lacrosse, like the thing is like the kid covering you is covering the whole game. So it's kind of, I feel like I'm never really chirping like the guy covering me themselves. I feel like it's always the bench that's always kind of heckling and stuff. So I feel like, if anything, I'll say something to the bench once in a while.
Okay, but got it. I love that because that was my favorite, to chirp benches, knowing that like you can run right by them at any point. And so my old reliable was anytime I'd be getting into it with a player on another team, I would say, you know what the unfortunate part is years after this game, people are going to forget about this game. People are going to forget about this, but you're still going to be ugly and you have to wake up and live with it when you're this ugly.
How would you rate that? Pretty good. I would say that's pretty aggressive. I like it though. Give it a 7.
I mean, okay, I'll take that. But that was always my, oh my God, Osello, you suck at lacrosse. That might, you might be right, but you're ugly and you have to live with that. So feel free to use that whenever you want.
Oh, I'll keep that in the back pocket for sure.
Patrick, why do you wear number 66? And do you think that there's any correlation between wearing number 66 and scoring 6 goals in the first game of the season?
Definitely no correlation, but I wanted to wear either 2 or 19 because of the numbers I wore for hockey and lacrosse in high school, but they were both taken by sophomores when I was coming as a freshman. So I was just kind of trying to pick a number. Like, I don't know, they said that we could pick any number we wanted. Kind of wanted the double number, and I liked it for Mario Lemieux, the hockey player. So that's kind of why I rolled.
Oh, thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, there's not many other people that really rock it. But, yeah, that's why I wear it. But definitely no correlation to the 6 goals.
As opposed to Mario Lemieux, the football player.
Yeah.
And then this one's another two-parter. Favorite and least favorite thing about being at Villanova? I have some buddies that have gone there, some guys from the Philly area. They have their biases, but I want to hear it straight from you.
Yeah, I mean, favorite thing? I mean, I would say probably lacrosse, I would say. I don't know if there's a team that's as close as ours. I mean, top down, it's been like that ever since I was a freshman. Just great guys, great leaders and stuff like that. And I think that's kind of carried over, so that's always been nice. And the alumni, too, like getting texts from, you know, like Danny Seibel, who I never even played with him, but just knowing him through, you know, being from Massachusetts and all that good stuff. And now the alumni reaching out is something that's awesome. Like I have a mentor who's graduated over, you know, 15, 20 years ago, and he reached out. So just kind of having that kind of community there is always awesome. Least favorite thing, I don't know. It's kind of, the public safety is kind of harsh. It's the only thing I would give. I feel like they're always out to get us.
Everything you just said resonated with me. First off, really unique take to think that your team, as opposed to anybody else's, is the most tight-knit team in the history of college lacrosse. So first off, love the cockiness. That's what I want to see more of. And second off, yeah, we had the same thing. People just trying to crack down and being like, oh, yeah, there's actual crime going on in this city, but we're going to try and find kids who are drinking and smoking cigarettes underage. So
yeah, I think it's the township too. But it's definitely the one thing. The public safety always seems like they're out to get the college kids, but we're really not doing anything too bad.
Good. I like that.
So like Nick mentioned, I'm the guy who asks the straight questions. So you guys just played a team that had played a game before you and you hadn't played yet. And now you're going to play Yale, who will not have played a game and you will have. So they've got tape on you. You've got no tape on them, but you have the benefit of the experience and the chemistry and everything that goes along with having a game under your belt. How does that advantage break down?
Yeah. I mean, I think too, that pops into, obviously we didn't play, but we had 2 great scrimmages against Rutgers and Princeton. Seeing probably teams are going to be ranked in the top 20 consistently throughout this year and kind of getting exposed to, that type of play, that type of speed, was definitely helpful going into it. I mean, but also I think on the other end, looking at Yale, playing their first game, and probably I think it's gonna be almost 2 years by the time we play them. I mean, they're gonna be hungry to win that game and just be fired up. So I think they're definitely gonna come off firing. I think the biggest thing we'll talk about is just kind of riding the wave. Obviously there's gonna be ups and downs in the game, but we just kind of gonna stay even keeled. They're gonna try and come out and hit us hard and all that kind of stuff, but I think if we just play our game and focus on what we do, then we'll be all good.
Got it. Thank you. Very, very, your SID or whoever did your media training did very well. So credit to them. Last one, perhaps the most important question. So you have to do integrity training and gambling training in the NLL, which I'm a broadcaster. I don't know if you knew Humble Brag. I don't know what I'm allowed to technically ask you, but hypothetical, if I were to be willing to put a wager on the Super Bowl, who you got? And I please know that this is a hypothetical, but I need this.
The only reason I'm saying go Bengals is because one of my senior classmates and roommates is a diehard Bengals fan, and I think if they lose, I'd be scared for all of us. So
go Bengals.
I'm definitely riding Bengals. Yeah,
I'm gonna bet the hypothetical house, and if I lose, I'm staying on your futon for a month.
All right, sounds good.
Patrick, we really appreciate your time. Thank you for joining us. Good luck as you guys prepare for the Bulldogs and look forward to watching the rest of the season.
All right. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate you bringing me on.
Nick, what an unbelievable day of drama in college lacrosse.
It was. We are an Inside Lacrosse podcast. It was a very good day to be on the men's Division I scoreboard and just hitting refresh constantly. And even with the one goal games, I think there were like 4 or 5 2 goal games too. And I just really enjoy those games where you have no interest in other than it's close. And it was the Villanova Penn State that was doing that for me. I know you already called that out, but I am going to be putting stock in Utah because the winner of the Utah-Vermont game, which was at Vermont, correct?
It was indeed at Vermont. I believe that Utah doesn't get to play at home again until like April.
I remember seeing some crazy – I couldn't remember that started next week or the week after. But I think Utah is going to make some serious noise. I tweeted out that they're going to cause a scene and make a big upset. And whoever won this Utah-Vermont game, I was going to say that about that team. So I can't imagine getting from Utah to Vermont as easy anyways. It's almost like, you know, there needs to be like some sort of ski analogy. Like, you know, the my dad's a lawyer rivalry, whatever. But I sneaky think Utah, we talked about them last pod, are going to be dangerous. And that was the one goal game that I was kind of like watching the most carefully because I think that those two teams are sneaky going to be better than people give them credit for. And then the only other one, I'm just going to give it a shout out, is Boston and Merrimack. I was watching Boston and Merrimack, and there's a short stick D-Midi on Merrimack, Michael Ferrara, that impressed me. Now, whether or not that's my girlfriend's brother is left to be seen, but I might have made a promise that I would bring up his name. And I just think that that was an interesting game to watch, Terry. So welcome to the Nick Ocello bias hour. But I'm going to say Utah is going to upset someone, and they're going to make a run. And I'm excited, and I'm circling that Georgetown. I'm calling it now. Utah is going to upset Georgetown on March 19th.
Woo! Big one. Well, since you brought up Georgetown, let's talk quickly about their Hoyas, and then we'll get to Patrick Daly. So, I mean, this was such an interesting game from the standpoint of Hopkins came in with 2 games under their belt. Georgetown was playing their first game, but Hopkins had played on Friday night. They had beaten Towson, put up a big number, which I think addressed some of the concerns around their offense and their ability to score goals on the basis of, again, how athletic they are, how much they rely on ball movement. And they got out to the Blue Jays got out to a 5-2 lead in the first quarter against Georgetown. And then basically things switched from there. And the most impressive thing, and I guess the most important question to ask or answer when it comes to analyzing these two teams, was how much of the outcome, which ended up being a 16-8 Georgetown win, was a function of Georgetown's really impressive defense versus any type of issues that Hopkins has offensively. You know, Will Bone was all over the field. I think that was something that a lot of people anticipated. Alex Mazzone, the long stick midi, scored the goal that I think was kind of the juice goal that got this turn of events rolling as it was. Owen McElroy, who I think there was some question as to whether or not he was going to be available after sustaining an injury in the preseason, did play, played pretty well. The one guy who didn't play was TJ Haley, who is expected to be back next week. He's the sophomore attackman who I believe had 46 assists as a freshman last year and looked like a monster in the fall. And Graham Bundy started attacking his place. Dylan Hess slotted into that first midfield line. He was also a little uncertain as to whether or not he's going to play with, I believe, a hamstring issue. So good to see Georgetown get back out and, you know, kind of prove that whatever preseason hype they received, I'm not going to say it was fully justified to this point, but, you know, certainly based on the way the last 3 quarters unfolded, Hoya fans can be pretty excited about what 22 holds in store.
And there are moments of brilliance too, where, you know, not that you ever want to find yourself down, but it kind of, it's almost like manufactured adversity where, okay, you find yourself down, like how cool and composed can you put together a comeback over the course of 3 quarters, over the course of 2 quarters, over the course of 1. And I think that those 3 quarters that, you know, the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th that Georgetown strung together have them, to put it like you just said, justifying the preseason hype, because I was a little bit of a hater to start. I was like, why is Georgetown of all people kind of up here? And just like I don't know, looking at how many goal scorers they had against Hopkins, I think it was like 8 or something, potentially even more. Like, any team that blows out a team like Hopkins, that whether or not Hopkins is good or not is, you know, kind of up in the air. But making a win like that in a bit of a comeback fashion and showing the depth of the roster, I think, is more important than making a comeback in general on the back of like one or two good players that you can scheme against. So justifying the preseason hype, I mean, obviously the bias that I have is I'm waiting 2 weeks and I'm really excited that Notre Dame is playing Georgetown. I mean, that's not generally a matchup that you see annually. So this game got me way more excited for that one. And I just think, you know, outside of the Notre Dame and outside of the Utah bid, Georgetown is looking to steamroll everybody. And do you credit more Hopkins being bad or Georgetown being good, if you had to choose one?
Georgetown being good, you know, particularly because they're good everywhere. And I think this is kind of the point that you were making, but you can actually broaden it from just talking about the offense to talking about the entire team. I mean, they faced off really well, which, not to say that that's something that you wouldn't have expected, but it was a big part of the reason that their game unfolded the way it did in the quarterfinals against Virginia last year. I mean, they had an injury to their faceoff guy in the first faceoff of the game. So point being that, like, it's a team that doesn't really have any weaknesses or holes, and they were playing arguably without, I don't know if TJ Haley's their best offensive player, but I think by virtue of being their assist man, you can make an argument that he's the most important offensive player. And they still put up 16 on a team that was 2-0 coming in and had just beaten Towson on Friday night. One of the things that, Nick, you can shed some light on is how hard is it to rebound and play 2 games in 3 days versus how much of a benefit is it from the standpoint of, like, you just go out and play. You don't worry about the game plan nearly as much because he didn't have as much time to put it in. All that sort of good stuff.
It's a nightmare to do the 2 and 3. It really is. Like, and I think a lot of times you see it in the NLL, you know, now that I'm, you know, kind of invested in that. But, you know, you have the advantage of being a little bit younger. But the thing that it comes down to is it is very team dependent. And for Notre Dame, anytime we had to do even like a Saturday to Wednesday turnaround, like the way that we prepared was so methodical over the course of a week to prepare for an opponent that we got very used to knowing the entire scout like the back of our hand, knowing you know, their personnel, knowing our offensive sets that we're going to run. So that quick turnaround almost worked against us because we didn't have a very loose run and gun, just go out there and play offense versus a team, you know, I think, not to just keep bringing Duke back up, but they're a team that they can kind of just like run and gun, and they probably have a less rigid structure of their offense. And I'll say it's like there's kind of a spectrum with Notre Dame being on the ooh, that really doesn't benefit you versus a loose cannon run and gun. So definitely depends on the team, but you're more sore 2 days after the lift or 2 days after the game than you are the day after. So if you have a deep roster and you play a little bit more loose run and gun, honestly, it doesn't matter a whole hell of a lot. Like, you're just going out and playing. But if you have the coaching staff that is putting you on a schedule that benefits you when you have more time to prepare, it can be a nightmare. I know that's not exactly a hard or firm answer, but that's the insight that I'm giving.
Well, it raises an interesting question about Hopkins, which is, which type of staff are they? I mean, obviously, they're a staff that made the choice to play Towson on Friday and Georgetown on Sunday. But I don't know that that necessarily is indicative of where they fall in that spectrum of being loosey-goosey run and gun versus, you know, very scheme-oriented and making sure that everybody is sticking to the schedule. So, Nick,
it's funny. Junior's an interesting coach.
Yeah, you know him, right?
Yeah. Because we were on the Outlaws, and he was like kind of like drawing up plays, and you know, it's interesting because he seems, and even when I was there, like over the course of a game, let alone the course of a season, he would draw up a play, and a lot of people would look around and be like, okay, so you're so smart that no one either A, knows what you're talking about, or B, can accomplish that. Like, he's drawing up plays that Junior and only Junior can run. And I remember, like, we don't know how to do that. And so he immediately drew up, like, the second play in his brain. And it was like an incredible, and it wound up being like, you know, one of the easiest goals we had all game for that Outlaws team. So I would say they err more on the loosey goosey. And when they get like, I just think it's a matter of time before Junior's brain clicks in a way that the entire offense gets to get on board. So it's no surprise that like early on, there might be some struggling, but like they're going to be like when all of that clicks and when Junior's brain, which is a 99 out of 100, makes sense to those college kids, that's going to be a lot easier for them to process and not, you know, post up 8.
So we are recording this, as mentioned, while the Virginia High Point game goes on. The Cavaliers are up 4-3 with 5.5 minutes to go in the second quarter on the Panthers. So I guess we'll hope that the status quo maintains in terms of the quality of this podcast, not missing a down goes number one result that we can talk about. But we'll get you out of the got to get you out of here on this one. Nick, who do you like in the Super Bowl?
Bengals. And
is it because Patrick Daly's roommate is such a big Bengals fan?
It's not. It's, you know, who wants to root against Cincinnati? You know, if you have to live in Cincinnati, that's enough of a problem already. How about we just give them a freaking bone? It's Los Angeles versus Cincinnati. How about we just let Cincinnati take this, enjoy their time? They've been through enough. I love Cincinnati, and I just hope that they get this one to talk about for the next 20 years of sports misery that they're inevitably going to have to endure. What about you?
Well, I'm a Ravens fan, and I'm an Ohio native, so...
That's unique.
Yeah, there aren't a lot of us rolling around out there. But that being said, yeah, I'm going to go with my Rust Belt brethren and, you know, belie the division rivalry and just say I think that they deserve it. I'm cheering for a close game more than anything else, but definitely also cheering for a Bengals win, probably because they're the underdog more than anything else. If they were the favorite, I don't think I would be as strongly in favor of them. But yeah, close game, Joe Burrow making plays late, that would make me happy.
And there was that meme going around that the AFC North is like, you know, the hood of the NFL. Like, I sneaky thought that was like some of the funniest things ever. So I'm going with the Bengals. I like that you're putting your AFC North beef to the side, rooting for your Rust Belt brethren. And that's very rare of a Ravens fan to do that. So look at you being a beacon of hope and a shining light in a world filled with black holes of Ravens fans.
Did you cheer for the Chiefs last year?
No.
Can you imagine a scenario in which you would cheer for the Chiefs in the Super Bowl?
Yes, I can. But I'm like, last year especially, I was like hater of the year. I was really a big hater. And Patrick Mahomes' brother, Jackson, I can't get over. He has so much free real estate in my head that I can't get over it. So I couldn't.
Very online, Nick Acello. Appreciate your time on the Tailgate Podcast.
Oh, yeah, there we go. Hey, thank you, Terry. I like this. Even if it's, you know, a formal podcast that took us getting to talk on a weekly basis, it's kind of like a nice little thing. So
we're learning a lot about each other. I think I knew that you would be able to be my meme dictionary. I didn't know the extent to which I would value that aspect of our relationship. But certainly, Troel Embiid made that a vital part of our dynamic. So, you know. Week by week, we're just getting through it, buddy.
Absolutely. Well, have a great rest of your afternoon.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Yeah, shut up. This Valentine's Day is manufactured capitalism to take advantage of bullshit, unhappy couples that want to prove that they're more in love than other people, and I hate it, but thank you. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Spoken like a true Mendoza grad.
Ow.
Oh, that's the perfect way to end it. Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Don't fight me on the cap. Oh my god.
I'm sure you'll survive. You're the toughest guy in Texas.